بيروت، من قلبي سلام لبيروت، وقبل للبحر والبيوت، لصخرة كأنها.
And if Western perceptions of Africa were shaped overwhelmingly by Conrad's Heart of Darkness, then T.E. Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom did something similar to the Middle East. That book became the 1963 film Lawrence of Arabia. And in Deborah Jopson's novel Oliver of the Levant, it provided the soundtrack that accompanies a 15-year-old Australian boy as he heads off to live in Beirut in 1969. Jopson, by the way, will be better known to you as a journalist. She joined me in a studio in Sydney. Deborah Jopson, thank you so much for speaking to us on RN.
Thank you, Kate.
Before we get to the novel, what's your connection to Lebanon?
Well, when I was 16 years old, my mother, who's Australian, remarried, and she married a flight engineer who got a job with Middle East Airlines. He actually worked for the precursor of British Airways, but she didn't want to live in London. She wanted somewhere warm and vibrant. And so we all moved to Beirut in 1969, which none of us really knew was on the verge of its civil war.
What was the appeal? What was her idea of what Lebanon, what Beirut might be like?
I don't know that I had any idea of what it was like, but I think that she probably thought that it was an incredibly exotic place, wonderfully warm, amazing food. It was called the Paris of the Middle East, and Lebanon is a beautiful country with just a little coastal strip next to the Mediterranean and two mountain ranges which are quite spectacular, lovely little villages, and Beirut itself, a crazy, mad, all-night city with lots of different cultures. So I think that's what she was hoping would be a great life for us.
So Deborah, what then was it like for you when you arrived? How aware were you as a 16-year-old that there was all this political tumult going on?
There had been an event just before we arrived, which was called Operation Gift, where some Israeli commandos landed at Beirut Airport and took out quite a few of the domestic jets of Middle East Airlines, which my stepfather was working for. So we had a little bit of an inkling that there was political turmoil and that it was quite violent. And not long after we arrived, there were car bombs and so on. So we became aware rather quickly.
Why not just write a straight memoir piece about this part of your life? Because it sounds like you were caught up in this extraordinary events in a really interesting part of the world. Why not just write memoir?
I think probably that I became tired of the strictures of journalism, and I did write my first novel when I was 8 years old. I had always loved fiction, read a lot, and scribbled away, you know, put things under my bed. And I just felt that I was dredging up all these memories, so I would read the facts of what happened to remember. I also had all our family, well, not all our family photos because we lost a lot in the war, but I had a number of family photos plus letters from Lebanon. And as I went through them, I sort of felt there was an almost dreamlike quality to them that lent itself much better to fiction.
And so you've written this novel, Oliver of the Levant, and the protagonist is a 15-year-old boy who ends up propelled into the world of photography. Why not make your central character a 16-year-old girl who finds herself propelled into the world of journalism? What could Oliver do that Deborah couldn't?
It's a good question. I did start out with a female character, but I think I felt that I put too much of myself in there, so it was too much of a memoir. Whereas if I distanced myself with a different gender, I found that I could think differently. And I also had heard so many stories from men and boys about bombs and so on. And I had actually been inspired by a story of some friends of mine whose son had built a bomb in Sydney. And I then heard from lots of other males about how this is quite a common rite of passage to build a bomb or some explosive device. And I was really carried away with that idea and I wanted to explore it. And so I think it was that distancing of the gender that helped to turn it into fiction.
And we do know from the very opening chapters that Oliver does build a bomb, even though it takes a while in the novel to build up to it. Why a bomb?
Of course, it's a metaphor for what's happened to the Middle East. But also, I think there's something about the idea of things that are tightly held inside a person and that when finally they start erupting and acting out, that there's a kind of an explosion and that the bomb itself is sort of the emotions made manifest in the world, which you could say is part of what's happening with all those terrorist events we're seeing now.
Tell us more about Oliver. What did he offer you as a writer? What sort of perspective did he bring to his world and to Lebanon?
I saw him as this amazing sort of innocent abroad, really, and it was sort of lovely being able to fill him up with all those very young emotions, and I felt terribly sorry for him a lot of the time with the things that I was getting him to do. But he also is quite a comic figure, on the other hand, and so I could get quite a lot of comic relief out of him. Once I'd gone through several drafts, I saw the funny side of it. At first, he was a rather pathetic figure, but then, you know, it's the gormlessness of youth. And also, a young boy turning into a man, you can just see the growth, so you have a natural narrative arc with one of these coming-of-age stories.
So he's an Australian 15-year-old boy who finds himself in Beirut. He's really not very well served by the adults that surround him. I mean, is it the case that they're a bit useless, or is it just that we're seeing them through his eyes?
Oh, no, I think that they were a bit useless. And I'm not reflecting on my own family here, but I have actually seen a lot of expatriate life. I've lived in different places in the world. And there is the mad parting element of it. And often in those days, it was mainly the men who went overseas and the women would be ripped away from whatever it was they did back home and often left with nothing to do, really. So there was a lot of crazy parting that would go on in the places where I've lived.
Well, something that I think you've done really powerfully in this novel is shown how mystifying the adult world can be. So an awful lot of big decisions are not explained to Oliver and his younger brother. I mean, in some ways, some of the political situation is explained to them much better than the question of why it was okay to take these kids from Sydney and fling them onto the other side of the world. What happened to his mother and so on? So is that one of the things that interested you, just the mysterious decisions that adults make?
Oh, yes, I think so, because I think that's part of that childhood innocence. I mean, part of the thing about being an adolescent is that you start feeling that you're seeing through the adults. You imagine what their motives are. You imagine what they're doing. And you're often wrong, and sometimes you're actually right. And you understand their power as well. So he had a sense of powerlessness, but eventually he found a way through to achieving power for himself and for others.
And part of that power he gets by finding things out. And there are an awful lot of secrets inside the apartment in which he lives. Tell us about Babette. Who's she?
Oh, Babette is his stepmother, who's much younger than his father. And she was once a model and quite a vamp and quite a flirt and likes to drink.
A lot.
A lot. Yeah. And, you know, she flirts with everyone basically to get what she wants, including Oliver and his little brother Jess. But he's fascinated with her because she's closer to him in age. And maybe he thinks that he can learn some secrets from her. And there's also a sort of a sexual attraction there, as well as a yearning for a mother figure.
I was also really interested in that image of the Western white woman in high heels and dressed up in 1969, walking through the streets of this Middle Eastern city. Is that based on your memory of what you saw?
Actually, it's based on the memory of what I experienced. I wasn't the sophisticated woman in high heels. I was just a young 16-year-old, but arrived there wearing micro mini skirts, and I had a terrible time actually on the street with all the wolf whistles and so on. So I pretty well translated that experience, and I did have to call on male chaperones to take me down the street and so on. But also there was a prime minister's wife called Patty Shamoon. She was an Australian ex-model. Not that Babette's based on her, but she had long blonde hair, and she used to cause absolute traffic jams apparently when she appeared in Beirut, in Humra, yeah.
You keep on commenting that things aren't based on your family or aren't really based on people you know. Is that something that you had to be careful of, writing fiction, thinking through the ethics of what you were drawing on, where it was based on memory, the impact it might have had on, say, your family or your friends?
Yeah, I've just handed the book out to a few of my family members and my friends, and I do worry that they think the characters are them. All I can say is that, of course, I've drawn on my own life and my experience of other people, but the characters themselves evolved into completely different people. I mean, to me, they're real people, but they're different people. They're not my family. They're not my friends. They're probably amalgams of loads of people I've met. As a journalist, I've met thousands of people in my life, so a lot of them have contributed to it as well.
Is it a different negotiation, though, that you have to do as a journalist and as a fiction writer? Do your readers have different expectations or even different sensitivities?
Oh, yes, I think really different. It's that thing of the difference between journalism and fiction writing is phenomenally large, actually. It's taken me years to really appreciate it. And I think it's moving from that idea I had of the dreamlike quality of how I felt about life in Lebanon and trying to sort of capture that whilst being grounded in true historical moments. It took many drafts for me to try to achieve that feeling of that state, that dreamlike state, but also creating a realistic world. And I don't think journalism really creates a realistic world. I mean, you can do rounded pieces when you do profiles. There's beautiful writing, there's beautiful reporting. It's its own genre, but fiction is quite removed, I think, from it.
Is this a novel just about Lebanon? Well, Lebanon and Australia. Or were you also thinking about what's happened since 1969 and all of those overlays of the whole Middle East and its ongoing conflicts?
I think really that it's just what's happened in Lebanon is emblematic of many things that have happened in the Middle East. And I was lamenting over Syria. And Syria, in the beginning stages of this last civil war, was really very similar to what happened in Lebanon. It's got, I think, much worse than Lebanon, but, you know, who can say such things? So, yes, it is symbolic of the Middle East, but I think it's the wider picture for me is the whole history of colonisation and how that's morphed into globalisation. I mean, you know, beyond.
That whole history of colonialism is fed through your character of Oliver because he is initially, at least, obsessed with the film Lawrence of Arabia and that version of British colonialism that it gave him. Was that a film that was influential to you?
I remember thinking Lawrence of Arabia was an amazing movie in the way that it grabbed you and it took you to this breathtaking landscape, and there were all these amazing adventures, and Peter O'Toole was this incredible white man going through, you know, true Orientalism. But I don't think I got caught up in it in the same way that Oliver did. But I still get stirred by the music. I think the music is beautiful. The landscapes are beautiful. So
what is it for Oliver? Is it a sort of masculine romance?
I think it is, yeah. I think it's a romance of what a male can do, and particularly that idea of, you know, the male from the Western world going off and being able to save the natives from themselves, basically. That's part of our history, part of Western history, part of globalisation.
And through your novel, though, Oliver comes to see just how dangerous that naivety can be. I mean, really dangerous. He finds himself in some very hairy situations, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And it takes quite a long time for the scales to fall from his eyes about Lawrence of Arabia. But, I mean, many people still find Lawrence of Arabia's life breathtaking. So he had to go through a very steep learning curve in Lebanon. And I suppose it was the reality of what was happening with the people he knew and all the different forces that he could see at work in their lives that changed him.
Why did you need to make Oliver a photographer?
It was so natural to me because I absolutely love photographers. I've worked often with photographers as a journalist, and if I had any kind of mechanical brain, I would have quite liked to have been a photojournalist myself, I think, except that I do adore words. But I just love the way that they operate. I love what they capture. I love their courage, and I just admire what they've done in the bringing reality to people far away. Yeah.
The description of the photographs that he takes are very vivid, and he starts taking them as a teenager. But at various points in the books, he has a certain coldness with that viewing through the lens. He's both doing something very dangerous, and he's looking just for the image, not necessarily for the humanity in it. So there's a bit of a critique of gung-ho war photography in there, it seemed to me.
I think, yes, it could be a critique of that gung-ho war photography. I also think it's probably a critique of journalism itself, because there needs to be a certain coldness of eye to be able to look at suffering and to report on it or to take the photo of it. And so people have to switch between these mindsets to be able to do it, to be sensitive to the people that they're photographing or reporting on, and also to try to show that reality of what's happening to them.
What then did writing fiction do to your sense of yourself as a journalist writer? Did it change that cold eye?
Well, I've always tried not to have an entirely cold eye. In fact, I'm famously a bleeding heart journalist.
You had a long stint as an Indigenous affairs writer.
Yes.
For example.
I wrote about Aboriginal affairs for at least 10 years at the Herald, and I have written about Indigenous affairs quite often since I left the Herald 3.5 years ago. But of course, to have a form of objectivity, you can't just plunge in and just get caught up in the emotion as you can with a novel. You have to write your facts down and report them because you have a certain template for reporting. So I guess it was the same for Oliver, really, although he's not as experienced as me. He's just trying to find a way to frame the world when he's taking his photographs. And at the same time, he gets the great surprise that, in fact, he might even be able to slightly change the world by taking those photos.
Did writing this novel change you?
Well, it helped me to process that idea of what happened to my family and to the country that we went to. I would have loved to have gone back to live in Beirut, and I used to go back every year and visit my family. My mother lived there for 10 years, but I watched the war create the disintegration of that country. So writing the novel in some way helped me to make sense of what's happening in the Middle East, although I would never say that I understand it. And that's brought to me more of a quietness and calmness about things that happen over there, and more of an ability to analyse and not get caught up in the emotion of it.
Journalist and novelist Deborah Jobson. She won the Walkley Award for Best Freelance Journo in 2014. And her debut novel, Oliver of the Levant, is published by Vintage. I'm Kate Evans, and you're listening to Books Plus on RN, Radio Australia, and online.